because, like a lot of ancient alphabets and writing, the further back you go, the more a sort of direct spiritual connect or connection is there in the actual form. Okay, I'm not going to say any more than that. You get a handout, and on the handout, you will see a page of Egyptian hieroglyphs. And we're going to work through 12 of them. Four of them I'm going to help you process. And the other eight, you are going to throw out ideas that you can relate to from what you're looking at. Okay? But there'll be other stuff in the handout. But I just want to point out that it's not an area where you are right or wrong. Okay? It's not that kind of area. It's actually areas of creative. I can see this. Oh, can you? I can see that. Wow. We're all right. Okay? I want to put up first a very familiar logo. Okay. I don't mean a commercial logo, of course. I mean a symbol. What is that?
Star of David.
Star of David. What culture does it come from?
Jewish.
Jewish culture. Right. It is wordless. It is picture. What I want you to do is to look at that and find any way in which you can see or intuit any spiritual idea from the whole thing or part of something or the design of that Star of David, which is one of the classic Jewish signs. Can you see anything in its shape, composition, and form? Philip?
Opposites.
Go on.
One triangle on top of the other way around, inverted.
Right. Okay, I'm going to separate it. And I would like you to, for the sake, and I'm pushing this now, I would like you to think of that as a downward flow. For the moment, what you've got is a point becoming a line or a place, all right? On top of which, or behind which, is this shape. And I'd like you to think of that as going up.
Interconnectedness of heaven and earth.
Put the two together, you start making connections. I've already heard one.
What, another one?
What did you say?
Opposites.
Interconnection of heaven and earth.
Interconnection of heaven and earth. Interconnection of heaven and earth. Okay? Or, if you like, personalize it, God himself coming into your life and you yourself coming into greater knowledge of, because it's endless, God's life and the two being superimposed. Okay, not difficult. Any other connections with the original Star of David?
6 points.
6 points. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 points, but they're not going
all directions.
6 points going
opposite.
All directions.
Circle.
Outwardly everywhere.
Yes.
Okay? 6 points. Okay. I'm not going to ask you to count how many triangles
all
you can
triangles
see.
All triangles are there. That triangles, which is triangle, 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 one, two, three, trinity and all that stuff.
Yeah, trinity.
I think trinity.
Okay. The only reason I'm offering you this is to start, obviously, but also to show you a fact of life that once you start seeing one connection of a form to a personal meaning, you start then to tend to open the floodgates and see many, okay? But an equally important point is, forget all this interpretation. This is a clue to hieroglyphics. If I do not have a Star of David, what's going to happen? Maybe.
The Jewish culture disappears.
Speak up.
I said the Jewish culture disappears. It doesn't have its symbol anymore.
But talk thing personally.
Oh, to me?
You
lose your identity.
You a Jew.
Yeah, right.
Without your Star of David, what will begin to happen?
Lose your identity.
You lose your identity, or more spiritually, you lose your
connection,
direction, and will, and sense of who you are being, and so on. And you start going and more of that tomorrow. Apocalypse revealed. But if you have your logo, if you have your icon, if you have your word, if you have your Star of David, and if you have your hieroglyph, you catch it. You carve it. And that is the origin of writing. It is the need to catch the message so that it is ever present, no matter where you are, in the sense of how you have moved, come back to the written word, okay? And I wonder how many of us have appreciated, thank God, I've got it there to come back to, and I don't actually have to remake it all the time inside my head, but I've got a physical hieroglyph, okay? Catching the meaning fixed. Now that is actually the sort of origin of language, speech, talking, writing, books, you name it, computers, programs. They're all coming from this same need to catch something so that it's there, it's set in place. And that's basically what hieroglyphs are. Now, what I would like to do is dish these around. I better have one myself. There should be one of each. The hieroglyph sheet is at the back. We'll get there and I'll take you to that, and we'll have plenty of time on that. I'm going to run through the sheet first of all, okay? You'll read the first line says, this is an instruction to Julian, mention the rabbi take on Mitzrayim, Egypt, and the first and the last M. Now, this is neat, and I'll just give it to you, because you'll wonder what on earth it's there on the sheet for. In Hebrew, Egypt, now first of all I should say, think of pyramidology. Oh wow, oh yeah. It's the answer to all the earth's secrets. Oh.
keeps razor blades sharp.
Oh! The Egyptians, they had so much, I could spend the rest of my life studying ancient Egypt. Pharaoh, Tutankhamun, pyramids, the lot. Okay, the rabbis say this, the Hebrew for Egypt. And think about the biblical going down into Egypt of Joseph and the children of Israel in Egypt for about 400 years. Egypt in Hebrew is a word called Mitzrayim, which I need not write up, but because of the quirkiness of Hebrew, the first M is shaped like that, and the last M is shaped like that. What I want you to notice, the rabbis say, is that the first M of Mitzrayim, which means, I think, something like divided land with the River Nile, Mitzrayim, the first one has an opening. The end of Mitzrayim
closed
is a clang. Gotcha. And that, the rabbis say, is the danger of Egypt. It closes you off and keeps you in. So watch it. Of course, the Jews went down and became slaves in Egypt, you see. So, absolutely fascinating. Now, what you've got, and I'm not going to go through them, are a number of Swedenborg direct references to hieroglyphics being forms of correspondence of natural forms that were felt or known or seen to have a spiritual connection. Okay? I'm not going to go into that. In general, Swedenborg says, when he talks about correspondences at times, that a tree is meaning a perception, comes out of the ground and shows itself, a perception. He could well say, this is why in ancient Egypt they depicted things in trees. It is a correspondence. That's basically the way Swedenborg would put it, you see. So the first page, you've got a number of things stated with some interesting variation, I hope, on what Swedenborg says about hieroglyphics and correspondences. Then at the bottom of the page, you've got a reference to a Swedenborg document called a hieroglyphic key. And a comment from Swedenborg Epic, a sort of biography of Swedenborg, about what the hieroglyphic key is and what it isn't. It's actually Swedenborg just jotting down about how things represent and correspond and mean things from the form they are to the meaning that they have. It's not as some have come to me and say, can I have a copy of the hieroglyphic key? And I say, you're locked in Egypt, my friend. Can I have a copy of the hieroglyphic key? No, it's not published in that way, and it's not a treatise on hieroglyphics.
Not a new Rosetta Stone.
See the Rosetta Stone, much more useful for that. And, you know, the Rosetta Stone is a picture in how things can become decoded and understood. So the hieroglyphic key. Now, and then a couple of references to articles on hieroglyphics in fairly recent magazine periodicals called Studio Swedenborgiana, which you just referred to there. Now, I want to take you on a little bit of a journey before we start dabbling and playing with these hieroglyphic pictures. You've got to follow this, okay? It's on the sheet, but I want you to follow me, so stop reading. Right? The first thing these ancient Egyptians did was to actually use pictures of things that look like the things they meant. I'm not talking spiritually, I'm talking actually words. Okay? So, for example...
It's in your pocket.
That could be a hieroglyph meaning, oh dear, a sword. Okay? And that's what they first did. They used things to depict and show what they meant. This is a sword. This is a bowl. Okay? Kindergarten stuff. Then what they started doing was time, and we're talking hundreds of years, then what they did is to actually speed the process up and also go a little subtler. So they would have several hieroglyphs, and it's on your sheet, several hieroglyphs, but in order to, and put them together, in order to really tell you what they are talking about, they would make a last one the subject matter. So if this was, as your sheet says, power, strength, ruling, and might, say, each with a different picture, they would actually show at the end of it a kneeling form of a king. And this is all about, it's almost like a bracket. This is all to do with a king. Okay? That was another development. But still the things were match for match in terms of the way in which they were drawn or carved. And then a huge change developed in the progression of language. And instead of a thing being a picture of what the word is, they started drawing things to mean symbols in the same way that we draw a picture and we call that M. Okay? Or a syllable, ma. So what happened in Egypt was the same pictures and shapes and designs started moving away from meaning a sword or a bowl, blooming obvious, to becoming syllables. And as soon as you do that, as soon as you have this not being a hand, which it obviously is, but being the syllable sur, right? And they'd be talking on, and occasionally they'd have this syllable sur in their language. Suddenly, the origin of a hand would be in the periphery, and you'd only sort of have the syllable. So you're starting to lose the connection, direct connection with the original meaning and intention of drawing a hand. And that process continued until this shape became that shape, became that shape, became sort of that shape. And the shape disappears. And that's the history of alphabets. You know, we do not have single forms which are syllables now, unless perhaps Chinese. We actually have single letters with single sounds. Okay. Now, what I would like you to do is have a look at your sheet and turn to the second page and look at the bottom, where at the bottom you've got two hieroglyphs, and this is absolutely real, I've taken them from a document, where you've got a scarab beetle, and by the side of it you've got a hawk. And the scarab beetle says, Set. Set. That's the word. I'm not sure if it's actually the Egyptian god Set. It's just the syllable Set, and the hawk is the word for M. Now just look above that to the two lines, or the four lines. Then, even later still, the pictures of things became syllables rather than just showing the obvious pictorial meaning. We've covered that. Obviously, this takes them into a whole new dimension. So, Set, meaning happened, is shown as a scarab beetle. M, to them, is shown as a hawk. But Set M has them both together, happened to them, scarab and hawk, and it means hearkening to. And it's come from, happened to them. And I can see a bit of a connection, but it may be difficult to make that connection, right? So you can say, is this development? Is this degeneration? Is this losing something that was intrinsically direct connection with spiritual stuff in ancient times? What's been going on here? But Swinburne is saying the ancient Egyptians' hieroglyphs are traces of correspondences in picture form. And that's what we're going to look at on this sheet. Turn, don't look at the next sheet, turn to the back page where you've got the 12 pictures. Now, I've taken these out of a kind of simple classic by a bloke who knew what he was talking about, Wallace Budge, who wrote about the Egyptian religion, Egyptian culture, Egyptian pharaohs, Egyptian pyramids, and the Egyptian language. So all the ones you're looking at are taken out of that book, which gives lots of examples. Now, if you look at the 12, I want to work across, okay? I haven't given you the syllables, but what you've got is the hieroglyph, usually several, the hieroglyph meaning water. And when you see water, what I want you to think with each hieroglyph is, what is the correspondence of water? Water is something that flows, something that is making most of your body, it refreshes you, it's transparent if it's clean, cleanses, it finds its own level, and so on and so on and so on. So water is the universal symbol or correspondence of truth.
Truth.
Water is truth. It can be falsity if you drown in it, or if it's dirty, it can have that other meaning. But just for the moment, for simplicity's sake, take the idea of truth. Now, if you look back at the sheet before, for the moment, here's what I'm just giving you on that first hieroglyph, okay? Now, I'm not saying this is gospel truth. This isn't divine revelation to Julian. This is actually me playing with it. Water has a correspondence with truth, and its many properties demonstrate this. In the hieroglyph, be prepared to switch pages. In the hieroglyph for water, there are three parts. From top to bottom, a symbol of flowing lines, below which is a half circle, below which is a nearly divided closed rectangle. Now, they were all syllables, but put together to mean water. Maha-pa, that sort of thing, okay? Interpretation. The top symbol is like the surface of water, and being at the top reminds us that truth is heavenly. The middle image is the rising sun, very common hieroglyphic symbol. The middle image is the rising sun representing the Lord to which truth leads us. The bottom image seems to point out that truth challenges us to choose, or truth reveals light and dark, yet they are part of a whole unity. Okay, do you get that? So you look at the hieroglyph, you've got the flowing water at the top, the symbol of the Lord in the middle as the rising sun, and at the bottom you've got this odd box. A single box with an incomplete straight line kind of dividing it into two sections. And you can interpret that as good and evil, above, below, heaven and earth, up to you. But that, I think, is a wonderful symbol for the activity of truth. All right? Can you see that? Or am I reading things in here? Okay? That, to me, is a stunning example of how an ancient hieroglyph meaning water, Mara, Pa, whatever, actually still keeps the elements of its deeper meaning. And people have sensed that all the way through, and Swedenborg picks up on it on those first references. Now, what I'd like you to do is not look back at the previous page from now on. No crib sheet.
Julian, can you talk to that bottom symbol?
Well, come to all of them. The bottom picture?
The bottom
picture. Oh, that bottom
again.
Picture.
Okay.
It is the lowest of the three. Mm-hmm. We're talking the first hieroglyph, water still. It's the lowest of the three. In other words, it's what's on the receiving end, if you like, in terms of us and experience and how it is. What I'm seeing in that is one box with a distinction. You remember how the other day, or it must have been yesterday, David mentioned distinctly one. Okay?
Yeah.
This is a distinctly one. It's one, but it's two. It's one, but it's not just one, pure and simple. So there's something which that box with the line through it indicates is the effect of the flow of truth into us. It challenges us, it makes me choose, it points out my heavenly side and my proprium, and so on and so on.
When I did...
There it is, a box.
When I did my session in Adelaide a year ago, one of my sessions was to do with the book of with the first chapter of Genesis, creation story. And in that first day, the first chapter of Genesis, we have the separation of light from dark.
Uh-huh.
And then very quickly after it, you have the separation of the waters. From the bottom, and the top.
And then the separation of dry land
and
sea.
But in that session, I attempted to explain that this separation of the waters actually was a time where God allowed something within himself, but separate from himself,
mm-hmm.
for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So before that existed, there was just God,
mm-hmm.
or just the I Am, nothing else. And that separation of the waters indicated is a duality, the beginning of duality, in which we could come to a place where we could say, I am myself and not God.
Mm-hmm. And yet I am in connection with God.
And that's what that box is.
And that box, that's about the fifth meaning.
Mm.
You know? It's got this meaning, that meaning, and Martin's meaning and many other meanings, but it's the effect, thank you for that, it's the effect of divine truth, the water and the rising sun, on our experience of life. Boom, boom, boom. Caught forever from now on. You see? That's the value of it. I might lose the idea of God and just think this is all there is. The hieroglyphic says, no, come back to it. Come back to it. Come back to it. Okay, so yes, we're going to see different resonances with any of these hieroglyphs, and none of them are wrong and none of them are fully right. Okay, the next one across I think is a beauty. It's the hieroglyph for the netherworld. Now the netherworld is not necessarily hell. It's kind of, I think the Egyptian word was duat, if I'm right, and duat was what comes after, okay? What comes after. And what you've got here, I've called it hell, I've bent it that way, are three shapes again, and notice again you've got the rising sun, and on the left you've got a circle. What does it look like to you?
Trivial pursuit.
Trivial pursuit.
Yes, it does too.
Trivial pursuit. A ball. Think of it as a disc. Think of it as a mirror.
Broken.
Shattered. Fragmented. Okay? That's one idea. You may say, oh, come on, Julian. Might not be that at all. I'd say you're dead right. So kind of, you know, think of the fairy tales, you know, mirror, mirror on the wall and that sort of stuff, and Hansel, was it Hansel, no, the Snow Queen, and Kay got the splinter of glass from the shattering of the mirror. It fell and went into his heart and iced him up from then on, you see. Okay, so on the left I've got the beach ball or the shattered mirror. On the right at the top I've got the image of the Lord. You already know some Egyptian. Okay? Rising sun, half a circle, is the picture of the divine. Now look at the shape underneath that. What does that tell you?
It's opening away from
the divine. It's like that box in the first one, but that was complete. This one is sapping away or resisting seeing. And Swinburne says, all those in hell have their back to the Lord. You see? Okay, so any other thoughts on that netherworld, what comes next world, or proprial world, or self-state, or whatever you want to call it? Any other things?
It could just be your back to life, not turning your back against the divine, but just like, I'm done with this life.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I'm done with this life.
Yep.
Wouldn't be the choice that we make in our lives, and we either go to the divine or we go into that box which is separate from the divine.
Yes, if that speaks to you with that kind of motion, then go with it. You know, exploratory stuff.
Well, something I get from it, like, so the mirror, which has to do with the understanding, is on the left. Mm-hmm. And the sun...
Self-understanding.
Yeah.
The looking glass.
Yeah, so, and the sun being, what is it, the affections, is on the right.
Warming, yeah.
So, affection things on the right.
Yep. Okay, we've only got about another 7 minutes. We're not going to... I do want to point one out. I'd like you to look at the sixth one, which is pain. Okay? Now, this struck me, wow, what a stark picture. First of all, I want you to look at the way those two birds... Well, first of all, let's stop with birds. Birds correspond to what?
Thoughts.
Thoughts. They fly in our mental skies. So birds see birds as the thoughts that flit in your mind. What are the birds doing?
Opposing. Looking at each other.
Looking inwards.
They're not looking
out, either like that, or both in the same direction. They're looking inwards, and what is in the middle?
That looks like a maze.
A maze, a good one. A kind of simple maze. So pain involves concentrated thought on, and no escape from that, on the focus of your attention, which is, I'm in a complete despair.
Yes.
Okay. A maze. Anybody get, and don't say a swastika for goodness sake.
No.
Does anybody see anything else in that shape of the middle thing?
I see a door, an entrance.
A door.
An entrance.
What does it lead to?
A dead end.
A dead end. Thank you. Leads to a dead end. And it actually, if you follow it on the line, it leads to a specific point. A sharp point. Which, of course, is like sticking yourself with a needle. Ouch. So, spiritual pain is sharp and focused and stops any other possible consideration from coming in. I am in pain.
A square spiral has points as well. Spiral, yes. Is kind of spiritual, and making it square gives it points.
Yes, but it keeps it angular shape, not
smooth.
Soft movement. Okay. So I think that's a great one, Matt. I also like pray, because the cushion that you've got at the bottom of pray, with that lovely bird and this upward flight indicated with the two lines, but underneath the bird, you've got this sort of shape which is like a kind of pillow or cushion, and on it there is something to land on and something that's going to hurt you like mad if you stand on it, and they are alternating one after the other, the T and the diamond alternating. So you can interpret that.
Looks like a gas burner.
Okay, now the one I want to finish on, I do like, by the way, again, look at seed. You've got the netherworld symbol there. You've got the shape of a seed, or is it an eye? And you've got the Lord as the divine, the affection. And you've also got on the right of it a seeing eye kind of picture looking at. Now, the one I want to finish with, and some of you will know this already, this is actually a direct correspondence legacy. And that is that in English, if I turn me, and I want to make it really me, I say, me, myself. Okay? Me, myself. In Egyptian, in hieroglyphic, it's whatever, I'm going to use that as a hieroglyph for me, But if they wanted to turn me or him or us into myself, himself, ourselves, what they did was simply add a snake or serpent. And the serpent in the Garden of Eden is the form that means the self. Sensual life that crawls in the grass and bites your heel and takes it all away from you in terms of fire, brings you down and poisons you, you see. So it's quite remarkable that, you know, the Egyptians used me to myself by adding the serpent to change it to myself. You see? Just one example of a legacy left over, you see. So, you know, fun area. And I'm going to let you with the first four are interpreted by me, myself. Me, myself. On the previous page, the other eight are for you to actually look at and see what you get. And don't say, am I getting it right? If you see it, you are getting it right. Any final comments? Because we've run out of time.
What is this?
Michael.
There's a hieroglyph for goodness, and it's a combination of a heart and a trachea. And when you think of the correspondences in Swedenborg's writings of the heart and the lungs, being a one, that represents goodness.
Yes.
So I think that's a wonderful hieroglyph that stayed in my mind because you underline it with the meaning coming from Swedenborg's writings. You see the importance of having them both united in oneself to be, to have goodness within you.
Yes. Heart and lungs.
Yes.
Vital organs, which of course spiritually is goodness.
Yes.
Yeah. Wonderful. Thanks for that. Lovely. Okay. Afternoon tea.
The seeing eye bit, how would you interpret that?
Which one?
Well, that's it, I suppose, the seed. Where does it fit in, the seed?
The seed? Well, actually becoming aware of its existence.
Okay. Growth, becoming aware. Progression.
Earlier on, we talked about earth and earth being ground into which the seed is placed. But you need to become aware of seeing the seed. And what you see is the seed. Leave it there, Julie. Okay. Enjoy.
Now, before we walk out,